Hey, Internet. Good morning.
Whoa!
It almost looks like I did all this on purpose behind me here, you know? Except I didn't. We moved some stuff around, and I was given this really nice table that my wife had picked up somewhere, like a yard sale, and then refinished it, and then we never knew where to put it, and then it was a desk for a computer, but then we moved some stuff around, now it didn't need it, and then I came back from this trip I was on to go pick up the table, which kind of started all the moving. We have a table for our dining room that will work for our whole family. We hope, we hope, we hope. And I came back and kaboom, this was sitting here and it suddenly makes this room look like it's a studio. It's just incredible. The picture is just amazing. It's not that cool in real life. It's like this, it's a closet. although the spaceship over here, this might scare you. Be careful. You know, the aliens are watching us. This was where the light used to hang. So I used to sit where you are, and then the light would be there, and now the light's over where you are on the table. So anyhow, it's kind of fun, though. I like the way it looks. And maybe we should just do this. There you go. Oh, but the shine. No shine. Anyhow, so good morning. We're going to be hanging out for a couple hours here and just chitty-chatting. I have a couple of things I want to talk about. There's been a lot of good contact emails coming to me this week, and I just keep thinking, okay, I'm going to respond to that one, and I keep wanting to, and now I'm not entirely sure where they've all gone. Like, I take pictures of them, I'm trying to create a system where I know where that is when the time comes, and that has not occurred yet. So actually, I'm going to check there. I know I have one on my desktop. I try not to keep stuff on my desktop. It gets crazy if you keep stuff on your desktop. So I'm kind of digging down into this file folder that I call the bag of holding, which is getting bag of holding-esque. Because I think I put a bunch of them in here. So hang tight for one second. I'm sorry. I started without being ready. It would be like under... no, it's definitely not there. Yeah, I don't know. So we're going to have to like rely on your questions a little bit. I know I have one in my head that I want to try to respond to very briefly. I did a video on it. It was like 30 minutes. And I was like, that's just overkill, especially for the question. And then I have another one that I want to read to you, which is, it's a long email, but it is, it's really good. It's really worth hearing. So I don't know, but we'll say good morning to y'all here first. And just, we got a new name. I don't recognize the Adventures of the Big Black Ram Truck. Oh, I recognize your face though. You like just change your name, but I like your name. That's fun. Dollism is around. You've been around, you know, you make me think of with Dollism. You make me think of like Near Eastern religions for some reason. I know you're not, but that's what it makes me think of. And Claire, what's up, Claire? Good morning. How you doing? Good to have you back. And Ardith's been chilling recently. I've seen a number of your posts around. Sweet. Welcome. 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 So, let's start with this question, and I'm not going to read the question. Excuse me. And I actually, if I cough a lot today, I am in fact ill. Although my voice doesn't sound too off right now, but man, my throat's been just sore, really sore. I'm not going to read the question in part because I don't know where it is, and in part because I don't want to go off on the tangent. But actually, I'm going to go off on the tangent first as a separate thing. So it was a question about life. It wasn't about the Bible. It was about life and about decisions you make in life to do this, that, or the other thing. And the questioner was a little concerned about myself and some other public pastors who have made a decision or two in a certain direction that they were uncomfortable with, and was asking, you know, what we do with that question theologically speaking. And the thing that's like really important to know and like grasp this as you're wrestling with life. And I'm not talking about the dogma of Jesus' two natures, right? We're talking about something like, what time do you get up in the morning? Yeah, it's that simple. Kind of. Anyway, there is no theologically speaking on those matters. There isn't. After your Ten Commandments, there really is no prescriptions for your life as a Christian. I mean, we should count the institutions of baptism and the Lord's Supper, to be sure. You definitely, but see, those are in the Ten Commandments. I mean, it's what Remember the Sabbath Day is. So it's even there. There are no prescriptions beyond that. We are not told about, the shape of the earth. You know, the atheists always like to mock us. The earth has four corners. See, the Bible says it. You know, you idiots. No. it's really not what the Bible says anyway. And the Bible doesn't really care about giving you information about the width of the earth per se. Or I was talking about this in something else recently, but it's such a cool image, you know, that God tells Abraham, look at the stars, count them if you can, so shall be the number of your children. So, you know, are we to take from that, that if we ever number all the stars, then that's the exact number of Christians there'll be? I'm not convinced that's really the point. Maybe it's true. It doesn't matter, though. That's kind of the point. The point I'm making is it doesn't matter that the Bible isn't as concerned with micromanaging your thought processes. God himself is like the consummate micromanager, and then every day is written for you. All your tears are kept in his bottle. There's, you know, everything's laid before you for your election. But it's not like you have to sit there and seek it in some sort of mysterious, hidden, find it way. And it's not like what can be known and is known about our theology. When we say theologically speaking, we should be able to say that that knowledge is clear. It's not unclear, it's clear. So that in itself is its own issue. As you wrestle with how do I live as a Christian in the present age, like just knowing that aside from acknowledging the creation of all things with the Ten Commandments at their root, there's no theologically speaking on what time of day you get up. There really isn't. Yeah, Jesus got up at dawn, so you better do it too. No! What are you talking about? This is not our religion. Right? Our religion doesn't do that. With that said, and that tangent... Oh, my hair's all sticky still. Sorry. I'm so vain. I know. I am. You are too. You are too. If you write it, if you type it, you know it. You are. I lost it. Where'd it go? It'll come back. We're going to get to the actual question. Oh, because the actual question was a good Bible question. It asked about how one can look at the world a certain way when the Bible says this. And that's important. That's important. Okay. So, but here's the other thing. And Yanabi, if you cut anything out of this to put in a short video, don't do any of the part I'm doing now. Just go to when I'm actually answering the question and make it super short. We want to keep that as short as possible because this does not need to be something that is radical. Right? It does not mean to be something that we chase. Let's chase the argument on insularity. You go ahead and yell at me about that. I'll go ahead and talk back. That's great. This, if you're interested, you need to do it. And if you're not, you should just not worry about it. When we're dealing with, it's so tempting to us when we're dealing with first article things, because there is truth in it. Like your TV might work better than my TV. And so really, I might want to get your kind of TV. If the company that makes my TV is always breaking and yours is lasting, then maybe I should change TVs, right? This is life. This is life under the created order God made us. This is good. But the temptation we have as humans, not just Christians, but as humans, but we fall prey to it as Christians too, is to realize, oh, I found some of what's good in life. This TV works better than that TV. And then we make this swift little jump. Therefore, all Christians must buy this TV. And if you don't, well, then you don't love the created order because you don't understand it. And so you really don't have enough faith, right? And we make that jump. C.S. Lewis was the first one who turned me onto this. I am not a huge promoter of Lewis. He was important for me as in my spiritual journey. He hit me at a certain time in life where he was very valuable. But he certainly should not be taken whole hog. In terms of everything he said, it was not right. His fiction is amazing. I don't know where he turned me on to this. It may have been A Mere Christianity, which is a decent book. He pointed out how man has a problem where he cannot adopt an action without insisting everyone else adopt it too. I don't know that he used the language, but this is very tightly tied to justification, which is a theological issue, right? That we are ever in need of justifying ourselves constantly. It's all we can do is defend ourselves. Just watch yourself. Listen to your own words. Carry on a tape. You like yourself so much, right? I do too. Me and you. Yeah, both. And carry around a tape recorder. Record yourself and then play it back and listen how much you talk about you and how much of you talking about you is trying to convince others you're okay. It's insane. This is all of us. There's not a single one of us that doesn't do this. So as a result, when we find something that's working for us to make us feel good, especially if we have a little bit of doubt about it, but in either case, we want everyone else to have it too. And it becomes not just a matter of, hey, this is good, let me share it with you. It becomes a matter of, this is the truth forever. Right. And that is the vastest, most dangerousest issue if we're ever going to deal in a healthy way with the first article and first article theology, what some would call the third use of the law. Why? Because that danger never goes away. You never get to a point where you don't have that danger. You might not have that danger in one moment, and then the next moment you're going to have that danger of pushing it on someone in a spiritual or a truth-centered way, in a justifying way. So you got to be super careful about that stuff. And this is doubly difficult in the church, because the church has to deal with life. It's where we are. And it's very easy for us to take the things of life and make them into the things of the Spirit. And part of my complaint about the insularity of our little cult, we're not really a cult, but we act like one sometimes. The insularity of the whole thing is very much tied to our having elevated certain first article realities to the level of theologically speaking. When they're good, they're fine in their context, in their place, but we're unable to even assess, is their context or their place still here? So I'll throw one under the bus that I'm so done caring if you don't like me about this anymore. But look, Sunday school doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't work for a long time, maybe ever. There might have been a point early on, right after we adopted it from the Methodists, when we were like, well, we'll just make them memorize Bible verses the whole time, where it had some impact. But and yet we can't even question it, right? You go ahead and disagree with me. That's fine. But notice how you are in all likelihood, not on all likelihood. There's a good chance, though, if it's the first time you've heard me say this, you don't even have a place to ask the question, what does church look like if Sunday school, in fact, is a bad idea right now, right? You just don't have it. And that shows, the point of that is not get rid of Sunday school tomorrow. No. Slow down. Let's talk. Let's have questions and answers and ideas and conversation, and let iron sharpen iron, and stop getting so emotional about everything. Man, don't have to justify yourself. Let's walk together in grace. The point is that we have a tendency to elevate things that are not what the scriptures say above what the scriptures say, and then get distracted chasing those things. And that's what I don't want to happen with my answer to this question. And I know it's going to. Someone's going to. But don't do it. Okay? That's my caveat. So the question is this. Goodness. Good morning, everybody. I see more stuff going on over there. Hold on. Where, yeah, I know. Hey, cliffhanger. But why does it show me how people are watching? It never used to show me that. I can see the likes. Uh-oh. Come on, YouTube. What's going on? I wonder who's watching. Anyhow, good morning. And where's the like button? Yeah. So here's the question. It is this. Hey, Pastor Fisk. I'm paraphrasing. I'm struggling with the idea that you and another prominent Lutheran LCMS conservative liturgical podcasting now pastor named Will Wheaton, good guy, you guys are carnivores. And there's this whole carnivore movement, and you're into it. And I'm bothered by this because God created us as vegetarians. So, all right, how can you justify this is what he asked, basically. I don't want to get into right now. Hey, I do not want to get into a long-winded debate about carnivore nutrition. I think it's a good idea. You don't? That's fine. Cool. If you're curious, go check it out. Human Performance Outliers podcast, best place to go. Start at the beginning and just go. You'll get more science than you can shake a stick at. It's amazing. Anyhow, that's not the question, though. The question is, God made us vegetarians. How can you say this is a good thing? And the answer is, God did not make us vegetarians. There are thorns. God gave us meat. Okay? So, God did not make us vegetarians. When he gave us every seed-bearing plant of the earth, it does not mean he wanted us to eat the leaves. That's an assumption. Okay? So, just slow down on that and go do some research. And then, second, the earth shall produce thorns and thistles. The planets aren't exactly like what they were, right? So to assume that nothing's changed and the planets are exactly what they were, well, that's an assumption. And even then, like, so are you going to eat a cactus? And the needle, and just shove it in your... No, you're not. So you're gonna look for the thorns, right? So if you want to dig on that one scientifically, go look up oxalates, and especially in the Human Performance Outliers podcast, listen to the oxalate ones. The thorns aren't just on the outside. It's a whole different thing. But thorns. So no, we weren't made vegetarians. We were made those who eat from the garden, okay? Then there are thorns put on this stuff. And then third, after the flood, and this is what's really important, yeah? After the flood, Noah gets off the ark, and God changes stuff. He says, here, eat the cows. They're for you now. Actually, he says all the animals. But the point is, especially the cows. Eat the clean animals that you have extra ones of that you brought to sacrifice to me. Eat those. All the ruminants. Eat those. Now, you got two ways of looking at that. Before that time, man really wanted to eat the animals because we're just really like that. And Wolfmuller does a whole bit about how we're always, our only question is, as fallen man is, can I eat it? Which is fairly true. So like, man just really wanted to eat the cows. He's like holding himself back. Oh, I can't do it. God hasn't said it's okay. Well, that got to destroy the earth, right? Or you couldn't eat them. Like, they were gross. And then God made them not gross. He made them to be a better food for us. However you want to look at it, I don't care. In Genesis chapter 9, God says, you should eat the animals now. Here you go. There you go. That's my answer. Thorns. God gave us the meat after the flood. Boom. And for the rest of it, go look it up. But in terms of my conscience in the Bible, pretty clear on that one. So, cool. I do not want to get distracted by this, though. There's plenty of other people that defend this without meaning to do it for you, right? Yeah. All right, cool. So let's see. Have you asked any questions in the comments? It doesn't look like it. What are you talking about me, though? Is my sound gone this whole time? The moment he starts saying that things are bad in themselves or looking down his nose at other people who do them, he has taken the wrong turning. Yes. Who are you talking about? Is this the Lewis quote? You find it that quick? An individual Christian may see fit to give up all sorts of things for special reasons, marriage or meat or beer. Yeah, it is. This is, you call it cinema. moving, not even moving, talking pictures. They are talking. Mere Christianity. Cool. Good find. Figuring that out got me over my shyness. Oh, cool. Figuring what out? The bit about not having to give up stuff? Alexandria, Minnesota. Good morning, Roger. Is it snowing up there? That storm, how'd that treat you? Let's see. I'm not seeing questions. So, here we go. I may or may not be able to answer this. Pastor Fisk, have you seen any videos by Pastor Josh Sullivan on the channel Ask the Pastor? Is he the Eldana guy? I might have. I didn't pay a ton of attention, but I noticed it. If that's who this is. Lots of good videos, but he thinks the LCMS is heterodox and people should leave it. Any thoughts on that? Well, sure, the Eldana is heterodox and people should leave it too. So we're kind of stuck with this issue of what is heterodox, what is not at the moment. And anyone who's claiming that their entire practice is orthodox isn't watching very closely. But the thing is, our practices are never completely orthodox in every place and every time ever. Rather, our theology ought to be orthodox, and we're always in reformation. And so I would contend that there's a little bit of that missing, maybe a little bit of that recognition of the church's double-sidedness. Article 7 and 8 of the Augsburg Confession would deal with this, right? So on the one hand, we're the body of Christ, perfect and pure, faith alone, only Christians. On the other hand, there are hypocrites in the church. And yeah, we're not supposed to like ignore them, but sometimes they're sneaky. Yeah, just reading Psalm 64 this morning, actually listening, about the wicked plotting in their hearts and how you can't find them out, and they think they can't be found out, right? So, but in terms of his narrow arguments, I don't know. I know that Eldona has a reputation for what you might call being heavy-handed in its treatment of people and pastors. There's a very hierarchical structure, which may or may not work at various times in history, so I'm not against that by definition, but... those who I know who've dealt with it don't speak highly of it, but maybe it's great. I don't know. So good for him answering questions, and good for him calling out our problems. If the LCMS has problems, call them out. Leaving it, well, where are you going to go? Eldana? Check it out before you go. Look long and hard. long and hard. I would prefer, personally, that we continue the conversation in a direction of we're not going to stop reforming this thing. And we're not going to stop being Lutheran in this thing, although I really don't want to talk that way anymore because I think it drives away Christians who might find us. But anyway, we're not going to stop preaching Christ. We're not going to stop being the sacramental answer, the only one that has both faith alone and the sacraments. We're not going to stop that. And Lutherans, wherever they are not going to stop that. And at some point, we're going to figure out how to get on the same playing field with all the others who agree with that. And those who don't are eventually just not going to want to be around us, right? So, that'd be my answer. But I cannot speak to them. But hey, here's my thing, though. Look, man, this is great. How's Paul say it? For false motive or for true, the gospel is preached. I mean, the guy's a Lutheran. He's putting stuff on YouTube. I have for years said that I should not be the only one doing this. And I'm not, quite. But there's not, I mean, there should be lots of guys doing this. And so good for him, but I don't know much else. And, as for LCMS being heterodox, we do have heterodox practices. There's no question. I mean, there are congregations that are deeply heterodox, deeply. My congregation is heterodox, depending on how you want to judge it. How do you judge it? What's your measuring stick, right? Is it one member is heterodox, therefore you're heterodox. So you got to be a little careful with that. A little careful. But with all that said, the official position of the LCMS is the Book of Concord of 1580, which confesses the scriptures, apostolic and prophetic, as pointing to Christ, grace, faith, baptism, supper, churchliness, and eternal church. So as long as I can still confess that, I don't think we're actually heterodox, even though there's some leaven in our midst, and if we don't get it out, we will be heterodox eventually. So, can I suggest specific sections of the Book of Concord to help discuss the possibility that we could lose our faith if we are not careful? I think just start at the front of the Formula Concord Epitome, and it's going to be like, I think it's the section on election. I think it is. I'm pretty sure Small Called Articles has some stuff in there too, but it's buried. The structure of the Small Called Articles does not make it easy to find things, at least unless you're an expert. Election, free will, which I think, I don't think the formula talks about free will as free will, but it may be there. It's definitely underneath the election stuff. So it's Article 1, 2, 3 is really wrestling with some of that idea. We could do this here. Hold on. This will take a moment. I need to drink my coffee, man. This is going to be cold. I didn't sweeten it enough. Let's see. What we want to do is we're going to go to... can I bring you along on this ride? Hold on. Go. No, that was not what I wanted to do. Oh, because I have to have... Okay, hold on. Let's do this. Someday, my friends, I will learn this program. And when that happens, things will be really cool. But until then, things are just going to be not really cool, and you just have to wait while I do silly things to make that happen. Now, but I don't have a picture of a window. Hold on. Can't not have me on the screen. Oh, there's a really fast, easy way to do this. Show picture in picture. There it is. Command-Shift-P. So we're going to go to Book of Concord. I should do it up here because it'll be faster. www.bookofconcord.org. And never mind. Slower, Jonathan. Concord. We'll just Google it. And instead, we will be told to go to bookofconcord.org. Does anybody know why that is? Is that because I use Brave as a browser? Is that what it is? Why on earth is that? Does it do? I type that in. It doesn't exist. All right. So we're going to look up David. Let's see. David. Let's see. It should be in Small Called. Here it is. Look at. I think we got the goods here. But see, that's not helpful. But we went to Small Called. Maybe this will work. David, we'll search the page. Aha. That was even better. I should have done that first. Small Called. Notice it's going to be weird. Of the False Repentance of the Prophets, which is in Part 3, Article 3 of Repentance. At the very last paragraph, which is 43, you will have it talking about falling away of David. I don't know if that's the best argument place, but it's certainly the clearest statement we have in the Confessions. I guess if you want, it's right before Part 3, Article 4 of the Gospel. See what I mean about like structure? It's a little odd. Anyhow, so that would be my answer to that. I don't know if that's that great of an answer. The thing about our confessions, I've been thinking about this quite a bit recently here. Our confessions are not really laid out to be apologetic works for everything. That's what Pieper is. So, I mean, if you want something on that end, go to Francis Pieper. So what we were talking about was the ability to fall away. I think that would be in volume 3. Francis Pieper's volumes are largely broken up into first, second, third article, although the second article is really at the about the second half of the of book 1, I think. But if you can find a copy of that in church library, borrow it from your pastor. He should have one. If he doesn't, yell at him. And he does the job of defending sort of all of the Lutheran dogmas. And they're in the Book of Concord because they're in the scriptures, but they're not really laid out always in an orderly, defensible fashion. And then you have some theologians like Melanchthon, followed by Chemnitz and Gerhard, who began to lay these things out with a little more biblical defense. But to some extent, they didn't have access to all of the attacks that would be made against these teachings. And Pieper did. And so Pieper does a really good job of pulling together all the attacks and giving rebuttals, both with further scriptures and reasonable arguments. I lost it. Where'd it go? Well, I had no thought on that matter. It was going to be an example of so like, for example, on the Lord's Supper, like if you go to article on top of my head here, 10. Yeah. Article 10 on the Lord's Supper in the Augsburg Confession, you will find it says almost nothing. I mean, there's a little bit there, but it's hardly a defense of the faith. Well, there's a reason for that. They didn't need to really defend it to the Roman Catholic Church. And so they just kind of said, yeah, we teach the basic thing everybody ever does. And they don't get into trying to argue against the sacramentarians who were there at that point and had already been condemned. Everyone knew they were wrong. Still do if you're reading the is words. sorry, that's mean. And so it just doesn't say much. So then you're there and you're like, well, I want more on the Lord's Supper. Where do I go? And it's like, well, you have to go digging, right? And you can find quite a bit more in small called, in the large catechism, and then in the formula. But they're not all like lined up for teaching quite the way that we modern people would like. And Dr. Pieper does that, right? That's what he does differently. We do not confess Dr. Pieper. Dr. Pieper has errors in his work. Yeah. But by and large, dude's an Orthodox baller. And, for that question, particularly, that's where I would say to go, unless you're like trying to convince a confessional Lutheran who's like, we believe the Book of Concord no matter what, but I don't believe you can fall away. Now you need to do your question. But if you're talking about like friends and neighbors who do not have like a commitment to the confessions of 1580, I'd go to Pieper. And I'd say volume 3 is where you want to start, but I do not have it magically in my head exactly where that would be. But you just look up free will, right? Or look up Perseverance of the Saints, might be there as well. Let's see here. Was this the same guy? I don't want to give too many questions to you, Dalism, but you got big words here. Initiator. Mostly theology of the words. Secondly, focus on the words. Are talking about also sometimes it's just be. I don't know what you said. Claire Walker had a question above about Keswick theology. Okay, so digging back for Claire. Where is Claire? Ouch! He finna skipped my question. I don't even know what that means. I didn't skip your typo. kinda. Probably kind of right. Here we go. There it is. I didn't see your question. I'm sorry. I is imperfect. We were talking about, see, now I can't answer. Keswick theology, I honestly don't know. I have no idea. Never heard of it. I'm still confused. Where does it exist outside of testimonies? Does it have anything to do with vocation? Keswick theology. If I Google this, will it even say something? Keswick theology. What is the Keswick theology movement? And I meant to give you some follow along. And is it biblical? All right. Well, if you got a question like that ever on the internet, it probably is not a good thing about you. I have to move some stuff so I can see the screen. You can see it. I cannot. There we go. The Keswick movement, also called the Higher Life movement. Okay, it sounds bad already. is a theological movement. Oh, look at that. John Wesley. Yeah, very bad. Originated in England, early 19th century. It was heavily influenced by the teachings of John Wesley. 1875, promoters have organized the annual Keswick Convention. Sounds like a blast. Can they just call it KeswickCon? That sounds cooler. KeswickCon. Hey, if you're watching and you don't like what I'm saying about your movement, I'm telling you, KeswickCon will be cooler. It just will. Do it. In fact, we should call it the LCMS Synodical Convention. Synodicon. Oh, I like it. Synodicon. I'm not kidding. That sounds much more awesome. Involved in these conventions, various Christian leaders, Hudson Taylor, Oswald Chambers. Yeah. Billy Graham. Yeah. Okay. Christian life consists of too many primary crises, justification, sanctification. They happen at different times in the life of the believer. Yeah, this is just bad. I'm not even going to go into it. It is so bad and so wicked and so not the Bible that it's one of those things where you have to just start with the assumption that you have to trust your teacher who says, you know what? That's so not biblical that I can't even prove it's wrong from the Bible very easily. And the non-biblical idea is that there's two types of Christians, right? Like, you want me to argue from the Bible that there's only one type of Christian against the idea that there's two types of Christian, but nobody in the Bible has that argument because it's not an argument. There are not two types of Christians. There's not one that is justified and then one that is later sanctified. You know what that sounds like? Roman Catholicism. That's what that sounds like. Ah, it's just without the bells and the whistles and the saints. Yeah, it's really amazing how swiftly the Reformation on the Protestant edge went right back to, how does Paul say it? I am astonished that you are turning to another gospel. Turning to another gospel. Wait, hold on. I feel bad. I feel like I should prove to you from the Bible that Keswick theology is wrong. Which, I don't know if I can do that, but I can do this. It doesn't even take much effort, right? Like, didn't it just say that justification is the first crisis and then sanctification is the second crisis, right? Sanctification. So what happens if I do, I mean, this, you shouldn't always do theology this way, but it is kind of interesting. If I just search those two words at the same time in my little search thing here, right? Well, what am I going to get? Not much, would be my guess. Oh, well, that's interesting. I think that's a spelling error. Justification, sanctification. Well, that it's there, so I did something wrong. Just, it's got to be a typo. Okay, we'll do it this way. That would have been cool if it had worked. What did I do wrong? Is it split the verse? This is going to take forever. Yeah, that's going to take forever. But I can find it by going here. What? Okay, then I was trying to be cool, and now I look like an idiot, which always happens when you try to be cool. Lesson. All right. Apparently, there's no 1 Corinthians either in the Bible. What is going on, Bible Gateway? There's no 1 Corinthians? So something tells me I have a... What on earth? Can I say Jesus? Will I get a search answer for Jesus? Yeah, only 1,058... references. All right, so trying to get to 1 Corinthians 1 is really difficult at the moment, so we'll look for wisdom. That'll get us there eventually. We can get a link to take us there. 1 Corinthians has 16 references to wisdom. Chapter 1, full chapter. Now, find on the page, justification. I had to have a typo. Nothing! What am I doing? Am I looking the wrong place? He has become... Is it chapter 2? Someone help me here. Now I really look like a fool. That's all right. I repent of my foolhardiness. And I can't even get to anything on my screen because there's all these other windows to make this program work. 1 Corinthians 2? What on earth? All right. This is killing me. Holmes... Maybe justification isn't in the Bible. Let's find that one. Justification. There we go. Man. Oh, okay. Romans 4, yes. Really? Huh. Justification only shows up 4 times in the whole Bible? It's a word? Doesn't seem right. I can't believe that he has become for us. I should look in the comments. I know one of you has found it already. What on earth? Okay, hold on. I'm going to come back to you guys. Oh, but I moved everything. Comments. You guys know where I'm going yet? Now that I completely can't find it? Man, this hasn't happened for a while. What on earth? Like, where I know a verse and I can't find it. I really can't find it. Yeah, I mean, it's he has become for us our justification and our sanctification. I mean, it says it, but apparently not. Am I looking like in the ESV? Am I not looking ESV? What's going on? No, I'm in ESV. Judges. Oh, that's going to, there's too much. Too much, too much. First Corinthians. I think it's, nope, it's not First Corinthians. Aye, 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 Jonathan. It's not 2 Corinthians. I know it's not. Oh, is it he made him? Is it he made him? Could be he made him. This is terrible TV right now. Sorry, everybody. It was going to be really cool when it worked, and then it just full on did not. Made him to be sin. That's a great verse. But nope, there it is. All right, hold on one more. Let's try sanctification. Which also doesn't show up a ton. There it is. Yeah, 1 Corinthians 30. Oh, it's righteousness. Ha. Cheating ESV tricked me with your translation of the word. Okay, so did anybody catch what verse that was? Righteousness. Oh, what on earth? Go away. Find. Righteousness. There we go. So, all of this was me attempting to show that the idea that there... I can't believe that. Well, how long was that? Like 10 minutes? All this is me trying to show that the idea that justification and sanctification are two entirely separate crisis moment events in your life, and that after one, you have to work to the other. Once you get to the other, everything's different, and there's two levels of Christianity. What a disastrous, wicked, diabolical teaching that has harmed so many people over its history. You want a biblical verse against it, 1 Corinthians 1:30. I was right, it's 1 Corinthians. I mean, and because of him, you are in Christ Jesus, okay? Him, the Father. Because of him, the Father, who chose you, you are in Christ Jesus, who became to us wisdom from God, righteousness, and sanctification and redemption, so that it is written, let the one who boasts boast in the Lord. So righteousness, okay? Diakosune, that's the Greek. Greek is a funny sounding language. Diakosune, this word is the word that's always there when you see the word righteousness, and it's the word that's always there when you see the word justification. And there are some distinguishing features in terms of when you go into it. It can be a noun, it can be a verb, it can be a participle, all this kind of stuff. And I don't know if the ESV editors or Bible editors like take that tremendously into account when they did the translating of it. But the thing is, they're taking one word and making it two words in English, and we should not distinguish those words in English from each other. So righteousness and justification have no distinction, okay? They're the exact same thing. He has become wisdom from God, justification and sanctification. That's what it says in the Greek. Yeah? Who? You? Your crisis moment? No, Jesus. And this is so key to your understanding of sanctification. It's done. Look at it. Jesus is it. Jesus is your holiness. It's done. But I still have to grow in the faith. Of course you're going to grow in the faith. And yes, if you don't grow in the faith, that means you don't have any. But you don't have to grow in some sort of by your own efforts way. You have to grow because plants grow. And you're a plant that God planted, so you're going to grow. Are you saying we're just automatons and all that happens without my efforts? No, I didn't say that. But you're busy trying to justify yourself, so you won't listen. It is not as though you're not the plant. But really, 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 really. I mean, when you, like, turned 3, right? And you were a little bigger than you were 2. Was it because you tried? Did you grow because you tried? I mean, just yesterday, that was 2 days ago, maybe, one of my kids who's now in the 10-year-old range. I forget how this came up, but somehow she brought up a reference to, I had at one point back when she was like four, I'd come home one day and I was like, Trinity, I command you as your father. And you know, your father speaks for God, right? Yeah. 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 Okay. I command you stop growing right now. Stay four forever. Got it. Got it, Father. And I think it was like 2 years later, I was like, do you remember that? She's like, yeah. I'm like, you disobeyed me. Right? Well, you can't help it. You're going to grow. That's what humans do, is they grow when they're young, right? And frankly, when you're old, you grow too, just in different ways. Sometimes the fall makes it so that you grow in bad ways, but your mind continues to grow if you exercise it, generally. So it's not that sanctification doesn't have an impact on you. It's not that Christ being your sanctification is not a renewal of the mind and a regeneration of your existence as those who live by faith in the promises. But it's not something outside of Jesus' complete and total gift to you. All you can do is say, I'm a worthy servant at the end of the whole thing, right? Let the one who boasts boast in the Lord. Yeah, you want to talk about John Wesley's issues? That verse could have done that guy some help. And now what I'm about to say is, I'm going to put it on the level of hearsay now, okay? Only because I've never seen it written, and it's an old memory. It's a memory of going to a pastor's conference while on vicarage, so we're going deep here, right? And the presenter was Rod Rosenblatt. And Dr. Rosenblatt was talking about John Wesley and his life. And he said that, and he studied Wesley's life because he despises him. For good reason. He said it's a very sad thing that at the end of his life, Wesley was readily and often confessing he wasn't sure he was a Christian. This is the same guy who had said he had reached total sanctification, this higher level movement they're talking about where you stop sinning. You just left it behind. At least for several weeks, right? That kind of thing. That didn't last all the way to the grave. And I, for one, hope to God that there was a good Christian pastor left in the room who preached to him that Jesus was sufficient for him. Same conference, Rosenblatt also pointed out, do you know that we have a couple of Wesley hymns in our hymnal? Jesus, thy blood and righteousness, my beauty are my glorious dress, midst flaming worlds and these arrayed, even there shall I lift up my head. It's a good song. Do you know that the Wesley brothers recanted most of the songs that we have of theirs? Like they said they're not what we believe anymore. Now, again, both of those, I'm going to put them on the level of hearsay. That's Rosenblatt. So you got to contact the, I don't know where you go, 1517, I guess, to try to get the reference, the footnote for that stuff. But if true, look at me be fake news. If true, but it's not if true, because I know it's true, whether it happened to Wesley or not. Wesleyan theology must do that to you by the end of it. So if you're sitting in that classroom and people are talking about this and they're also on fire, that fire burns out because it's not the fire of the Holy Ghost. It's not. That's their own personal fire they started. It's their own unholy fire, and it doesn't last. So be afraid, honestly, for them, and don't listen. And go back to this verse. Christ is your sanctification. He's the one who set you apart. He's the one who's made you holy. Why do we think sanctification is new obedience anyway? It's just ridiculous. It's a different word. That's a whole different topic. All right, so there you go. Hopefully that gave you something back after my ridiculous chasing of the the lack of justification in the Bible. Isn't that crazy? Four times. But it's righteousness. Wherever you see righteousness, that's what's going on. The righteousness of God. Right? As Romans 3, apart from works of the law, justification. All right. So, didn't skip your question, Claire, but you did manage to embarrass me. Zan Mark Lund, you found it. Did you find it before or after I found it? Looks like you found it before. But, what else we got? Fatherhood and passing on the faith. True enough. Hard, man. But you're right. If you're not intentional, it won't happen. It's got to be somewhere, somehow, some way. And there's not a right way or a wrong way, aside from the Bible. But like you got to fit it into your family culture somehow. If your family culture only does iPod stuff, well, then you need some iPod stuff that's playing Bible verses, right? And if you're a bunch of readers, then read. You need to have a conversation. You need to also intentionally take your kids to church and not shove them to the side with a kids pack. Those things are death. You need to have that kid with you and use the hymnal and show them the hymnal the entire time. And will you not get as much out of it? Probably. Because you're doing your job, which is to show your kids. So yes, I don't know what you're responding to, Bill, but absolutely, intentionality is gigantic. That's part of my issue with not being willing to ask questions about our insular culture, is that we have ceased being intentional. And that bothers me. It bothers me. Have you tried Bible Hub? Really? Why, Carl? What is more useful about Bible Hub than Bible Gateway? I'm totally using that growing toddler compare. Oh, okay. Oh, cool. Good. Yeah, you know, sometimes something comes out of your mouth, you're like, that was a good idea. Where'd that come from? It made sense. I have no idea. Never thought that before. But it's good. The theology rattles around and starts to come out. It's marvelous. It's all doing its own work. Isolate the verse, open up a parallel version, and use that for something. Yeah, sure. It's diakosune. Billy Graham was, this is a good example. Yeah. Yeah. See, as I was talking, as I was talking about Wesley. Yes. I'm terrified for Billy Graham because of what he would say at the end of his life. It was not a strong situation he found himself in. You listen to that guy preach in his 20s. And that's a lesson for all of us, regardless of what Judgment Day will have to say about Dr. Graham, Pastor Graham. I don't know what his reference is on that. Billy Graham, that's his name. Regardless of that, anyone can be broken by heterodox theology. And that's why the accusation that the LCMS is heterodox is a pretty serious accusation, right? Fair enough that there is definitely roots of bitterness and misfocus and definitely some heterodox practice. Over time, over a lifetime, it can cause real harm. And to push it back to the previous topic then, you want to talk about something that's going to cause harm, something that tells you your justification is not enough, that's going to cause harm. It's going to cause a great deal of harm by the time you're at the end of watching yourself just fail through this life. Oh, Zach, I wanted you to be motion sick. That was the whole point. I'm trying to get you to barf everywhere. Saturday morning, what more could you want? Let's see here. Big black Ram truck. Even when you are intentionally exercising your faith, there's no guarantee that they, well, true and not true at the same time. So you're right. You're right. Ultimately, at the same time, the Bible is pretty clear in stating not only that you need to do it, but that it's, you can judge a pastor on how well he does it. This is pretty straight up, right? I mean, it's actually terrifying for me. Let's look at this here. See if I can do a Bible search today and not have it go crazy. His children. That might be too big. We want to go. Sorry for motion sickness. I know it's so hard. We'll try two at once here. It's in one of those two. I'm thinking it's Titus. We're going to go to Titus. Nope. Gonna be First Timothy, right? Nope, it's gonna be Titus. All right, full chapter. Titus 1:6. Should I go slow so you don't get motion sick? Poor little childrens. Oh, don't do that. Oh, these windows. I love them, but then they're in the way of me being able to see. Let's see if I do it this way. Does that help a little bit? Kind of. All right. Yeah, it's Titus. So Paul is talking to Timothy about appointing. Now, if I could highlight at whatever that other site was and not have it do this silly little thing, so I could like just put my mouse over something without it like blocking it, that would be sweet. I would change websites for that. All right. He's talking to Timothy about why he's been left in Crete to keep the churches from falling apart in human senses and to put pastors everywhere. Appointing elders means putting pastors in every town. So, oh, for Pete's sake, internet. And stuff. All right. Where was it? There we go. Anyway, interesting. It doesn't say to hold voters' assemblies for them to choose elders. It just says appoint them. But That's a different topic. Now, in describing what kind of men these should be, if anyone is above reproach, right, you can't publicly charge him of something gross. The husband of one wife, that is, he's not a philanderer. And then this one, his children are believers and not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination. Now, you know what? I have not looked at this thing here. What is that? Oh, are faithful. Well, fair enough. Same thing. I have not gone and... did I really go back? Did I push that button to go that way? I thought I just went back from the note. I probably had to scroll up. I'm totally going to tangent now. My eye hurts. My face right here is so snotty clogged that my eye hurts from the pressure. Sickness is awful. All right. So, the point again, going back to the comment, right, is that if you can judge a pastor based on whether or not his children are believers, then it must be possible to press the faith onward, generally speaking. Now, again, I've wrestled with this. My kids are still younger, right? Is this talking about like at that point? Like once the kid leaves, goes off into the world, and they fall away, like does that mean the pastor should be removed from the office? I mean, I could see someone reading this verse and coming to that conclusion. I'm not sure that all the verses bring us to that conclusion. But I take comfort in this, not for my own ministry, but for my children, to believe it's actually possible to pass the faith on. Because if you can judge me according to that, you can judge my teaching according to that, how I manage my household, that's how 1 Timothy says it. If you can judge me according to that, then it's got to be achievable. I have to be able to pass it on. And I don't think it's going to be by being a legalist, by the way. What am I supposed to pass on is part of the question. Am I supposed to pass on a rigorous ability to make apologetic arguments about everything? Not necessarily. I need to pass on the Ten Commandments, the Creed, the Lord's Prayer. I need to pass on grace, justification. So I agree with you that certainly there's the randomness of life that can cause anyone to fall away. But if your kids aren't listening, there's probably a reason. And I'm not saying like, just, I'm not trying to attack or anything. But usually there's, what on earth? This looks so weird. There's probably a reason. And it could be anything from the TV has already got them and they're listening to that instead of you now, I don't know how to say this. You can miss a window. Let's put it that way. Like by the time they're 10, if they're not listening, you're not turning them back. That's kind of the thing, right? So if we're going to talk about intentional parenting and you're waiting until they're 7 to start with anything, except like sports, maybe, right? The likelihood of them being formed by it is much less. When is a child formed? 1 to 3 is when they're formed. And we, generally speaking, we don't make a lot of good use of that time. We just kind of put them in a corner, let them watch the TV. They're not watching. They're in the room with the TV on. They're watching. And they're being formed. And rather than having that be the time where we are especially taking them to church, especially holding them up so they can see everything, especially pointing to the hymnal, especially taking them into Bible study, right? Nope, they're not there for that. And then they never grow into it, which is interesting to me. Anyhow, I hope that didn't come across as attacking you, Ram Truck. At what point are the children responsible for themselves? Yeah, I have no idea. But there is that point. There is that point. Yeah, and good. Yeah, that's kind of my point. Yeah, if you don't have them at 5, they're done. It's about right. I mean, you might get them back, but it's going to take a while, and it's not going to be fast. I remember the 1 year that we sent our oldest to public school. I was so disappointed in the results of that. I was afraid we lost her. There was a noticeable change in her behavior, her emotions, really fast. It's a small town, super small town. So it should have been nice and safe in 1950s. But we did get her back. I mean, it took a year of her being in the home and homeschooling again. I mean, there's something to that, by the way. If you send your kids to other people to teach them and then they don't listen to you, it's like, well, you taught them not to. I'm not saying you have to homeschool. Go back to that first article a bit earlier. I'm not saying that at all. But you got to be aware of what you're doing does. It has effects. And, you know, if from age two, they're with a bunch of other people 8 hours a day and they're with you for an hour, yeah, they're not going to listen, right? They're going to listen to everybody else. Yeah, especially their peers. If from age two, the ones who are they're with really teaching them all day long is people their age, then that's who they're going to listen to. It's a strange approach to education in my mind, but is what it is. And yeah. All right. So, yeah, no, thank you. Only if absolutely necessary. But thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Audio hymns for Tyler's great idea. Dirthmik. Audio hymns are just sing. One of the things my wife did, I'm so thankful for, is she made a lullaby for each child. And with five, that takes 20 minutes. and she, sorry, I stretch it. Oh, it feels good though. She sings it every night to them, and they are liturgical songs, right? So, Agnus Deis, I forget what the other ones are. But every night she's singing the liturgy to them as their lullaby. And so their whole life, that's going to be like their thing. You know, I remember mine was Away in the Manger, which is fine. It's a fine song. My mom used to sing that and I used to love it. You don't sing it very often in church. and the text is not particularly, it's not that good, really. Yeah, it's okay. But with that said, yeah, I want to dig into, let's see if we can get into this here. I'm going to find it. Is that there? Yep, that's there. Needs to be on a different page. Let's move it to the right page. Where am I? Where are we? Are we here? Come back there. There we are. I want to read this letter that was sent to me for me to share with you. And there it is. Of course, I can't tell if you can see me. Nope, you can't. Why? Oh, for Pete's sake. You can see me. Don't get me wrong. You can't see the letter. Let's see. Show entire screen. I just can't check to see if that's what you're seeing, which is a little frustrating. No, that's right. I can see that there, right? Yes, good. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, because if I go away, then it changes. Right? No, it should still be there. Yeah, okay. Is that right? Yeah. Man, sorry. Welcome to my life. All right. Wait a minute. This is not the one. What did I do with it? This is not the one, but we're going to do this one anyway. Sounds fun. So I thought we were going somewhere. Gear shift. I have a question regarding your video on the new Earth. I seem to have been really intrigued recently by the beginning and end of this world and life. I was wondering if maybe you could elaborate on what you said in the video regarding our resurrection when Christ returns, becoming what we were intended to be. I guess the struggle with the fall of man and clear intention that prior to the fall, we were intended to have this immortality, I think is what she means. Immortality, you mentioned in your video. Adam and Eve had access to the tree of life, but the moment they ate the tree of knowledge, the option of the tree of life was taken from them, even though eating of it appears to have been the antidote of sorts, according to Genesis 3:22. I don't think it was the antidote. No. Not the antidote to the knowledge of good and evil. Jesus is that. You needed a different reality in Jesus. Tree of life was just going to be immortal life. It was the food that was going to sustain you forever. It had steak on it. Wink, wink. or is this what you alluded to in your statement regarding the nature of our intended and coming immortality differing from eternal nature? Is the pairing of the immortality and the knowledge of good and evil what sets God apart and why he put a stop to it? I know this also ties into the need for Jesus, and I know in a way, he is the new tree of life. And we'll talk about that here. But is this because his unsinful nature is what reconciles the fact that we obtained the knowledge of good and evil at the fall, and Christ therefore had to right that wrong prior to providing us the gift of eternal life we were intended to have at the time of creation? I think yes is my answer to that, although it wound a little bit, so I don't want to be caught unguarded in one of those curves of that question. But I think the answer is yes. I apologize. This is long, and I'm beginning to ramble. I don't know about that. I just have mulled over this for quite some time and have many questions. Leave it at that. Resources, books on the subject. Fall of Man. Existence of Evil. Yeah. Peeper. Again, I'll just recommend Peeper again. But the... let's see. How do I get back to this? So, Tree of Life, Jesus. Let's start with that. There's a marvelous hymn. I feel like I talked about this already. Around in circles. There's a marvelous hymn called The Tree of Life with Every Good. And Stephen Starkey, great hymn. And it takes you from the Tree of Life being the thing in the Garden of Eden that we were given to eat, that we were then not allowed to eat after we became evil, so that evil would not have eternal life, which is a good idea, all the way to the cross being the real Tree of Life now. And theologically, it's a great move, and it's true. We should see in the tree of the cross a better fruit than whatever was on the Tree of Life. But I'm not so sure that's kind of what the Tree of Life was supposed to be, right? It's tough because when you're dealing with the future world, we don't have a lot of what I would call clear, guaranteed not to be symbolic in any way promises. So Revelation has a lot of great pictures in it. How much of those are completely literal, actually the way it's going to be, and how much of it is just a picture for us to imagine it from where we are now? Will the streets be made of glass that's also solid gold? Sure, maybe. I hope so. But if they get there and he's like, oh no, what that really meant was just it's imperishable and valuable. Oh, okay. And you can, and it reflects light, right? Cool. But it's not like the same chemical structure as the element AU, right? Would that make it like false? You know, and the way we kind of tend to think as American science peoples, that would make it false. But you have to ask, you know, what's the intention? So when you see at the end of Revelation the throne of Jesus at the center of Mount Zion with this stream of living water running through the whole city, and on either side of the stream is the Tree of Life bearing its 12 fruit in all seasons, or in each season, leaves being for the healing of the nations. Well, is that Jesus hanging on the tree the whole time? No. I mean, maybe. Symbolically, perhaps. The point is that where there was one Tree of Life that we were supposed to eat to live forever, then we became evil, and God didn't want evil to last forever. He has redeemed us so that now we're going to live forever. And the food we eat will make us live forever. And I hope it's actually trees. I want to live in Gondor. Sounds awesome. You know, at the end of Revelation, the picture of Zion is Gondor. It's fantastic. If God has a different view of what it's really going to look like than how I'm imagining it from the text, great. You know, whatever. It'll be better, right? God's going to do it better. As, you know, but there won't be any steak there. Well, maybe not. It'll be better. Just let that be real. You know, stop thinking that you know more. So, Jesus being the Tree of Life, yes. And now, particularly as we eat his flesh and drink his blood, there is a fruit of the vine reality going on, right? But then, that doesn't really get to your question of, you know, what was man supposed to be, intended to be, and what this tree really, really is and was. And the problem is you're in an area where, again, we just don't have a ton of verses on this thing. There's not a lot of other Bible that devotes itself to explaining this reality. There was, so all I can do is tell you, I may have already said this, right? So I'm just repeating myself. There was a tree next to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil that if and when and maybe as you ate of it, I don't know if it was like, did you get eternal life for a day, but then you need to eat more the next day? I don't know. If and when and as you ate of it, it would make you live forever. It was perfect food. So it did have steak on it. Just kidding. It was perfect food, right? Absolute perfect food. No thorns. And then we did not eat of it. And we ate of the knowledge of evil instead. And we learned of it very well. sadly, so well that we think evil's good now. That's how well we learned evil, is that we decided it was good, and we're wrong, and that's how well we've learned it, right? We haven't learned to discern it yet, because we still think it's good. But God knows it's bad, and so, right, so he enters into salvation history in order to redeem us from it. But when he bars us from eating of the tree of the of life, again, it's to prevent that humanity that is evil from, and thinks evil is good, from doing that forever. Basically, it's in order to save us. He has to let us not be eternal so that he can kill us, so that he can raise us from the dead. Now, have to, I mean, is God's hands bound? I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to start defending, you know, God's eternal mystery. But it's just a rabbit trail of basically unfaith. But now your question about Jesus entering and becoming, you know, the new man, unsinful in his nature, and then giving that to us, it's more than that, though. It's more than just his incarnation. It's also the justification of the human nature. Because even perfect as he was, by joining himself with man, he put himself under the wrath of God. He did. He made himself one with our just need to go to hell, to be destroyed by God. That's what the cross is. God destroys him. God destroys Jesus at the cross. How's that verse go? The sharpest pang that pierced him was the sharpest stroke that pierced him was the stroke that justice gave, right? Stricken, smitten, and afflicted, great him. So even perfect incarnate walking around, he now is stuck with sinners and with our nature. And he's tied to it, and it all bleeds into him. And then it can't contain him. He's bigger than it, right? And so as a result of that, and that justification, or that atonement, however you want to say it, his holiness, that would be his uniqueness of being uncontainable as God, that now begins to bleed out onto us here, take and drink, right? Like literally bleeding on you. And in that bleeding upon you, the humanity of Jesus, perfected and justified both together, is more than the tree of life in some ways, but then sets us to be promised that with the resurrection, we will be, this is your initial question, I think, what we were intended to be in the first place. That means physical, spiritual creatures that are tied into the rest of the physical spiritual world in such an intimate way that we're rightly called the head of it, and that we will live in, I guess what you'd have to call joyful service. That makes it sound so pooey, right? We will live in laborious freedom with our hands and our minds together, without hate, with food, forever. It's kind of awesome. We're what we're supposed to be. We'll be creatures who love each other as we now love ourselves, and creatures who love God for who God is. I recorded with Wolf Mueller this week, and it won't come out till next week, and this week's didn't even come out. It'll come out later today. But we were talking about, now I lost it. Loving God. And that word love is just such a problem. Makes it sound like you have to like feel squishy thoughts about God. And it's just not what the Bible's talking about. Loving God is to know who God really is. To be glad that he is who he is. Your king is your king. He's a good king. Long live the king, right? Not I need a hug from the king, or I want to kiss the king's cheek or something like that, right? It's the fullness of theology to know God. I don't know if I even remotely answered your question. It was not the one I expected to do, though. Let's see here. So I'm going to jump over. You guys still talking hymns? What time is it? 7:49. Will Jesus, with his wounded body, showing the price of sin, provided to us the knowledge of what God wishes us to... That's a run-on sentence, my friend. That is, that even though the wages of sin is death, I think the answer is yes. You worded that awkwardly. Are you talking about in paradise? Like at the resurrection? Are you asking, will he have his wounds? Are you asking, will we get to know real goodness only? That mercy is real goodness in Jesus? Yes, definitely an answer to that. And I would say, yes, he'll have his wounds too. I mean, think about it. Crown him with many crowns, right? He's already got one, you see. He's got a crown he'll wear forever in his flesh, that which the thorns made upon his brow. Why is that never in any of the pictures of him? Kills me. Yes, his crown. What else? What else we got? What's up, Jordan? Say good morning. I feel like everyone's just bantering about hymns. Not that that's bad. Don't get me wrong. I don't know. Kind of want to change the topic. We all believe in one true God? Dude, that's like one of the best hymns ever. Ever. All y'all peoples who want to do some revivalism in church and get your rock and roll on, and you're like, well, can't use hymns. Go use that one. It'll work. I promise. It really will. You have to be a good musician. You have to know how to. You have to know how to like let that distorted guitar and the amplification like wait. You gotta wait, right? Let it build. Get that ballad feel going on, and then when you start moving toward that high point, bring it. It's a great hymn. We're just lazy. We don't learn. By the way, also speaking of children and hard hymns, we teach the children the easy songs that they're never going to sing when they're adults. But if you teach the children the hard songs the adults don't like, you know what the children do? They sing them and they like them. They don't even care. They don't even know they're hard. They just sing them. So if we just all in one generation said, Sunday school is going to be learning the hard hymns. That's all we're going to do. We would have a whole generation that would not leave the church because they'd want the hymns so bad because they're all the songs they just love so much. They might not even be Christians, but they should be because the words are good, right? But they would be so culturally attuned to the what goes on in church, they would not put up with anything else. Instead we start singing goofy songs, we do VBS goofy songs, then we do youth group rock and roll, and then they go join the rock and roll church. Like, what happened? Oh, well, at least they go to church. Yeah. Where they're never given the gospel, where baptism is not real, all that stuff. Yeah. My friends, listen to me. Be a jerk. Okay. But it's just sad. Depths of Woe, I Cry to You. Good one, too. Are you guys going to start Echo tomorrow? Really? Oh, this is exciting. Any advice on the best way to teach it? One chapter at a time. I don't know. Because I've never taught it as a book. I think I would recommend reading the book out loud rather than expecting people to read it before they come. I would do that no matter what the book is. And I would make sure whoever your teacher is knows the paradigm, the picture, that whole big picture, that they know that and how it's built well enough that they can kind of start to draw it themselves and talk about it. So when conversation starts happening, you can pull the pieces together. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that I have good advice on how to teach anything. If you're going to talk about like in a classroom with a lesson plan, other than like you need five things that you know really well that you're planning to talk about to the people who are going to listen. And if at all possible, you need some way for them to absorb or want to, if they want to, it'll make all the difference, absorb that information and take it with them, apply it later. But I mean, that's been the question since Dewey set us on this track a little bit here is how do you get people to want to do anything in the classroom when the classroom is basically killing your soul? So I'm not sure. That's a good question. I have to think about that one. I like the question, and I'm glad you're reading it. I think reading it will be good for you. I think it's one of the best things I've ever done is that book. Darth Mick. When they were assembling the LSB hymnal, they rated every hymn on a scale 1 to 10. All of the 10s were cut, and only one 9 made it. It's on Eagle's Wings, which is wildly popular. Yeah. Yes, it's... It is so annoying as a tune, though. It's like not even a good tune. But then the chorus is okay, but the verse is just as a tune. The verse is awful. And then it doesn't really say anything. I mean, again, those types of hymns, if you sing them at the Lord's Supper, suddenly they do a lot better. They're really more useful. But that one, it's kind of like, you know, Ring Around the Rosie. Ring around the Rosie. That's the kind of song it sounds like to me. It's just not even that good. The Twilight Paris one's much better. I had to duck out earlier. I just wanted to say thank you for answering my question. No, no. You're welcome. All right. You guys are just tough on the hymns today. So I want to know why I can't see who's viewing this. Like how many viewers I have, which is frustrating to me. But I appreciate the likes. If you haven't liked yet, that'd be nice. And then I got to figure out here. It's 7:55. 7:55. And I'm sick. And my eye hurts. My coffee's getting low. And I got to get a podcast up. So part of me is thinking, it's time to move on. The room looks better, though, doesn't it? I'm really happy with this. This is great. We'll see if it stays this way. We're going to go look at a house today to rent. We're renting this one, too. But this is, like, so square and, like, symmetrical. It looks like it's all on purpose. Except for the spaceship. All right, so... I don't know. I had lots of other stuff I wanted to talk about. Now, here, this is problematic. So my wife had this idea that we would put this up here, which is good, I think. I still really need one of these that doesn't make noise. But then I can't lean back and have it come toward me very well. And then my face is, like, completely covered too, right? Yeah, that's probably been a problem this whole time. So, like, it needs to be like this, but then it still really doesn't... I guess that picked it up all right. You guys are having your own conversation. Like, why am I talking? You can just talk. Who are the characters on my mug? That's a great question. That makes me happy. Aw, man. Aw. So, I could go so deep with that question. I'll try not to. The long and short is, that is the sole survivor. Who is the main character, who is you, in a game called Fallout 4, although it has hints of Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas with it, and that is your dog, Dog Meat, who makes an appearance in of some kind in both of these games. And you, in the game, it's you have the ability to have companions, people that go with you around, NPC computer companions that go around with you, but the dog doesn't really count as one, and yet he'll always go with you. And even though his AI is completely wonky and he does a lot of stupid stuff and it really isn't that great, the image of you with this dog is one that appeals to me. And part of the reason is this. So the sole survivor, you're someone who was from a previous era that kind of magically, I won't go into all of it, survived a world war that destroyed the whole planet, and you come out from this vault later and the world's just completely a catastrophe. There's raiders everywhere and weird organizations trying to run everything and, you know, radiation and it's all about survival. And, as a game, as a first person shooter game, it just has so many elements that could have made it, should have made it maybe the best game ever. The only thing that stopped that is that its code is so buggy that if you want to do anything called modding to it, which the community around this game of modding is just huge. There's so many cool additions that are there, but if you want to do anything, it's just going to break your game. And so I've never finished the game. I've played it from the start, 60 times probably, just trying. Oh, this time I'm going to play it. And I'll play 3-4 hours, game breaks. Start over. But the idea of walking around this wasteland, trying to survive and do good for other people, not really knowing what's coming, having to live hand to mouth, and then having this companion with you, this dog that always goes with you, and really appeals to me. Dystopia. Why does dystopia appeal to us so much? Actually, I have an answer to that. Did some research on that recently. Yeah. So yeah, again, Fallout 4 is so fun. Yeah. Almost. Almost. I really want it to be. It could have been the best game ever. And I actually in my manifold lists of things that I wish I could do and make that I will never do and make, one of them is a game called Steam Out 4, which doesn't exist really as anything other than making a game that learns from everything Fallout 4 did right and wrong, and then tries to make the game that really should have been the game to end all games. But yeah, so that's that. Even though I've never finished it, and I finally gave up trying at all, I don't know, 5-6 months ago. Although I've been feeling like going back recently. She's calling my name. I still love the image of the sole survivor and his dog. Yeah. Looking for his son, actually. The Outer Worlds. Oh, sweet. So this is... So Fallout 3, like, broke the mold of the Fallout franchise, which was already very popular, but it made it cool. I mean, it was cool before, don't get me wrong, but it made it different. It made it a first-person shooter role-playing game set in the future. I mean, you just don't have that. You got a lot of first-person shooters. Everyone's running around shooting. Blah, 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 blah. But a role-playing game where your character develops, your abilities are kind of connected to strengths and weaknesses that come and go, and it's not just like tanking in Fortnite or whatever, Overwatch. It's a lot more complex than that. There's a story. So they did that, and then they put it in the future in this dystopian post-apocalyptic world, which is really clever and kind of snarky and makes fun of the 50s and Americana and the present all at the same time. So it was very clever. Fallout 3, it was a huge success, and it was a good game. And then Fallout New Vegas came out, which was Fallout 3, but outsourced to a smaller company to just make a follow-up with the same engine and the same... And not much changed in terms of its computing power. But they awesomified that thing. Oh my. Did they make the story funny, cool, deep, confusing? I mean, there's this... One of my favorite memories from that game is being trapped in the basement of a hotel in Las Vegas, where the people who all look like they're really nice are actually cannibals, eating each other and eating visitors. And I've gotten myself down there, and on the one way out that I can get out, I don't know why I did the other way. I had to go the one way that I can get out. On the stairwell, there's a guy with a flamethrower shooting it down the stairwell. And I am literally like with 8 bullets left in my ammo, and I have no more ammo. I got a baseball bat, and I've saved myself. Like my quick saves, I've saved myself out of a recent quick save. So it's like, okay, I can go back and replay an hour and a half, or I can figure out how to get past this guy with the flamethrower in this basement, which most of that entire level or segment was role-playing. It was talking to people. Like, it wasn't like I fought my way down there. That was great. You got a robot that's named, not Glad Hand. I don't know. It was so great. So the company that did that, Obsidian? I think it's Obsidian. They did not do Fallout 4. Bethesda, who owns the franchise, took it back, did Fallout 4, did a good job, except for the code. And it wasn't quite as funny, but it was still good. So Obsidian, who had wanted to do it, they went and made their own game. And that game's called The Outer Worlds. And it's coming out soon. And I am excited. That's great that it looks fantastic. That is exciting to hear that. There's another one that's coming out soon that I really was looking forward to. I don't know. I haven't had time to play anything recently. I bought a couple of roguelikes. I bought a roguelike package on Steam, and I still haven't gotten to it. But it has... I want to play Salt and Sanctuary. It looks really interesting the way that game's been set up. And then there's another one that's like a Metroidvania. Actually, the package was called No More Metroidvania. which, if you don't know Metroid or Castlevania or Legend of Zelda, it will make sense. But that style of game... is sort of an underground roguelike segment of gaming on consoles and whatnot. So anyhow, Death Stranding, I'm not as interested in that one. I don't remember really. Last of Us 2 came out. What, I gotta have a better name than Last of Us 2. Last of Us is one of the, is the best single sitting one game I have ever played, I think. The best story arc of multiple games is Mass Effect 1, 2, 3. So good. Last of Us is just a whole other world. It's not even a game. It's a life experience. New Vegas was great. It's a great game. But Last of Us is a life experience. What a thing. Oh, I want to play that one again, too. Man, so good. Thanks for making me think about games. Ooh, so I can talk about this a little bit, too. This is kind of fun. I can go way back on this, too. Like, there's layers and layers within layers. There's a thing called the Strengths Finder by Gallup. Gallup, the one who does the polls, right? There's a book called Strengths Finder, and really, the book you should buy if you want to get into the concept is called First Break All the Rules. And it's a book on management. That's how I found it. Management is a hobby of mine, or entrepreneurial thought is a hobby of mine. And First Break All the Rules is about why most management really sucks. So why does everyone hate their boss, right? Is because the boss is doing things that they have to do because they've been told this is how to manage, and because the company does. And there's a lot of issues. There's another book called Why Work Sucks, How to Fix It, which is pretty good. But one of the issues is the boss's job is usually to make you overcome your weaknesses. Like that's what the boss does. So you're there, you're supposed to do something, but you're weak. And so that's what he's going to like watchdog you on. And every year you're going to have this wonderful little hour-long sit-down where you just get to get criticized about all your weaknesses and then told how you're going to work on them, right? And what the authors and scientists behind StrengthsFinder and First Break All the Rules discovered was that the most productive managers, those who had teams that were loyal, committed, and achieving, had learned that even if they worked at companies that said you had to do this, you know, do your annual review, criticize thing, they just didn't do it. And they realized that rather than try to make people overcome their weaknesses, if they discovered what their strengths were and just kept giving them that kind of work, not only did they do more of it, they enjoyed it. Because your strengths tend to be things you do anyway. In Lutheran terms, we'd call this vocation. Right? You have particular build. And if you want to think of it in role-playing game terms, that's fine, right? Are you a medic? Are you a healer? Are you a healer? Are you a rogue? Whatever, right? Yeah, that's helpful, though, actually, that we each have those things. I've shared this somewhere before, but you know, we came back from a congregational men's shooting thing at one point. It was like over a year ago. And I have a piece that I had not cleaned well since buying or being given about a year before that. I'd cleaned it, but not well. Because this attention to minute cleaning detail, not a strength, not a strength. So, you know, I could do it, but I don't like doing it. It's work, right? And I had a friend here, he'll know who he is, who was like, can I clean it? I was like, really? Yeah, I'll clean it for you. I enjoy it. Okay. And he did. He did a fantastic job. So, you know, that's just to illustrate strengths versus weaknesses and vocation, and that we're built different, right? So the Gallup First Break All the Rules book is about this concept. Then the Strengths Finder is a test that you can take online, costs $50 or $60. If you buy the Strengths Finder book, you get a free version, but it's not as complete as the one that you can buy online. And it will assess you, kind of like a Myers-Briggs does, according to these various categories of strengths that apply to life, but also to office and work and to everything, basically. So I did this a year and a half ago now, and I'm in the process of doing it for some of my team members here at church. I'm making them do it. It's so great for understanding each other. So this is all to answer the, or talk about this game. So one of my one of my strengths is achiever, which doesn't mean I actually achieve things that are good, right? Like, you could use these things for evil or whatever, selfish reasons. But what it means is that I get my own value of myself from completing things, from getting things done. And if I don't achieve something, whatever I think that thing might be, then I internally and emotionally devalue myself, right? And do bad talk and all that. So one of the recommendations they have for people with this particular strength is to put fun on the calendar. Otherwise, you won't do it. You'll be so busy trying to get value by achieving stuff, you'll stop having fun. And so you have to make fun something on the calendar so you'll achieve it and feel good about it. And so as a result of that, this is all to get to. And as a result of that, I started doing that about a month and a half ago. And I've got a few more tabletop gaming experiences happening with my kids and with others. And the one I've been focusing on is one called Eclipse, which is an older game now. I guess it's out of print. I bought it when it was new, like right out of Kickstarter, and it's this space economy war game. It's just fantastic, and I'm kind of excited because I then very recently now bought a couple of the $8 expansions, so these extra hexes that become part of the space you get to explore, and I bought an expansion which gave you some new ships and stuff like that, and which allows you to, you could have done this before. You can play as humans or aliens. And the human races are all the same. And the alien races have like different advantages and weaknesses. So the whole interaction on the board is like different win scenarios and stuff. If you've ever played Twilight Imperium or heard of it, not unlike that in concept, although certainly unlike that in a lot of ways. So I'm super excited because those hexes came. That story was all to get to the fact that I have a black hole in my Eclipse board now. And I have a pulsar. And we're going to play with the aliens, and I look forward to not being the plant people. So my kids and I did our first alien run. It was Tuesday. And I let them all pick first. I kind of told them what the different aliens were, and then I let them pick for me. And there were only like two left? I don't remember how many left. But they're like, you be the plants. Be the plants. And the plants spread. And they're good at spreading. That's what they do. I did win, but I think it had a little more to do with, I got a little lucky and I just made a little wall so no one can get to my spread, and then I spread that way and I got big enough that I won. But my daughter, who did the technology aliens, did a really good job. She figured that one out as well. Anyhow, I don't know. Does that matter? Pulsar, yeah. Put it on the calendar. Oh man, I need to put video games on my calendar. And see, one of the other things I did was I put reading on my calendar. I love reading, and I don't read anymore. It really hurts my feelings. I put it on the calendar. I still can't get to it. I moved it to a different spot on the calendar. Next week, Monday morning, before I'm allowed to do my weekly review, I have to read for half an hour. I think it'll happen. Golly. I just got a text message. Was that important? Let's find out. Let's see. Interesting. That's very weird. That's funny. I haven't heard from Matt Richard in a long time. And that's great. All right. So. What do we got? It is now 8:13. You want me to stick around? We're not talking about anything. I need a question. Oh, there's a question. There are a lot of clashes between management philosophies out there and scripture. They don't acknowledge original sin. Yeah, of course not. Why would they? Although, you know what? Sometimes I think they get it better than we do. I mean, what is this idea that, you know, you can't fix your weaknesses? Is not untied to original sin. In some ways, what management does is a lot of the best management philosophy is so aware of it, they don't call it sin. They just stop trying to fix it and they try to bend it. It's like capitalism is the same thing, right? Capitalism is realizing you're not going to make us a bunch of selfless people. But if we make your own selfish interest a cause of you helping others. Like you get paid to help others. you'll do it for you. And we'll all benefit. Yeah. And so you shouldn't expect them to try to spiritually fix anything. Actually, some of that's out there and that stuff's problematic. But their acknowledgement of what original sin really is and how it impacts the workforce maybe is better than ours. We don't believe in it the way we should. We have it on paper. We're like, oh, I'm a poor, miserable sinner. We don't actually think that, though. We think everyone's good. Oh, well, we're all fine. Right? No one's plotting evil here in the congregation. Lying. Right? So, yeah. But I don't know. This is why first article thinking is so important. If you keep your categories right, you're not really going to get in too much trouble. So as long as you recognize that learning to lead humans in a team, right, which is what management thinking really is, learning to coach. Yeah? So put it in a sports context for a second if you want, because it's the same idea. You have a team with a goal and you got to coach them. Learning how to do that well shouldn't be a theological issue. Just like nutrition shouldn't be a theological issue, right? It's not a Bible issue. So, you know, what's the problem unless it becomes a justifying issue? You have to do it this way. It's the only way to do it. Right? The church always does it like this. When you start doing that, or when you do it and it works, but then you don't want anyone else to do it differently, even if it works for them, because you need to believe that yours worked in such a way that you have a value that will last forever. I mean, that's problematic too, right? Now you've moved it into second article. You've made it your justification. You made it your salvation. Even if not like in sort of an official, it's my religion way, in a emotive, the way the mind lives kind of way, you've begun to get your value to justify yourself permanently from what you do. So think about, again, you know, achiever needs to put fun on the calendar. Otherwise, he'll be so busy achieving, meaning just finishing tasks, to try to get value for himself so he can feel good about himself, right? That's all justification. Shouldn't I just feel good about myself because I'm baptized? And go out and do good for others just because? Yeah, I should, but I don't, right? So I'm the achiever is good and fallen at the same time, saint and sinner, right? And is engaging in both. The danger is when I forget that and don't keep them separate, right? Don't keep the achievement in the world separate from what my real value is, which is the supper, that Jesus Christ has become my justification and sanctification and all of these things, wisdom. So if you have your category right, is it dangerous? Sure, because the danger is always to shift it back to the second article category. But the problem isn't the knowledge itself. The problem is what we do with the knowledge spiritually. And if you think you're going to stop that from happening by getting rid of the knowledge itself, you're just going to do it with some other knowledge. You're just going to grab some other piece of creation and make it your God instead. You can make having a minimalist, tidy house your God, and you can make having a completely not tidied up at all house your God. You can do it. We do it. We justify ourselves. So I would say no, there are not a lot of clashes between management philosophies and scripture. There are not. In fact, there are so many overlaps where they understand us better than we understand ourselves. I really wish more pastors read actual management books, not the ones written by Christians. They get it all wrong. They mess it up something fierce. That's how my grandma used to talk. they get it all wrong. But one of the best books on original sin ever is How to Win Friends and Influence People. And he never calls it original sin. And he actually is quite wrong about the goodness of man in literal senses. But the whole book is about how to recognize what selfish people really think like. And that you're one and that everyone else is one. And so if you just know that and understand that, you can end up being a much nicer person. And it'll actually benefit you. It's like capitalism for personal relationships. But it's like really, is it wrong? Is it wrong to realize that if I just do what I want, I end up being a jerk and it hurts me. But if I learn to listen to what you want and help you, I'm not a jerk and it helps me. Like, is that wrong? I mean, you can make it selfish. We do. That's what we do, right? But, you know, his insights are just unbelievably good. I think I'm off the top of my head, but I think my favorite one was just smile. Smile at people. So that's a good idea. I have trouble smiling at people. I'm so shy. If you ever see me in real life, at like a conference or whatever, I won't give you a real smile. I'm really bad at it. I even, for a while, Tim Ferriss talked about this. For a while, I tried keeping a pencil in my car. See, I smile. Here, it's not so bad, you know, and if I know it, but like one-on-one, walking in a hallway, I will not smile. I'll be so nervous. I'm such an introvert. But I kept a pencil in my car, and I would put it between my teeth while I drove to try to make my muscles. I don't know. It didn't work, I don't think. But it's hard. Where was I listening to? Oh, I was listening to some Sam Harris on mindfulness. I was okay. So I've recommended the Waking Up app before, and I've said I don't know about the teaching in the app. Like, if you go and do his, like, explanation of the practice stuff, I can't speak for that, and I now emphatically will say, yeah, just skip that part. I finally listened to it all. It's fine. It's just muddy as all anything. And he's more Buddhist than he admits. Which is weird. I don't get it. Anyhow. But he was talking about, there was something that was good in that. And he was talking about eye contact and how hard it is to maintain it and how some of that is, I mean, he connected to like primal fears and primate development and blah, blah, blah. Okay, sure. Shame. And he did actually use the word shame, which is interesting because, yeah, anyway. Shame, you know, eye contact, the power of eye contact. That the only, this was such an interesting thing. The only people who never have trouble with eye contact are psychopaths. Sociopaths. Like, they don't really, they receive no emotion from anybody else, right? A psychopath does not mean you kill people. And a sociopath does not necessarily mean you kill people. But you got such a wall in your chemical mind that other people's facial reactions and emotions, all that, they don't impact you emotionally. You can learn to read them, but they don't impact you emotionally at all. And so you can just stare at someone's eyes and never like feel like they're looking at your soul. So he was talking about that. And anyway, this all comes out of the shyness. So for whatever reason, I'm not good at that. I carry a lot of shame, I guess. Yeah, look at that. That, I guess. I know I do. Anyway, we'll leave that. Buddhism and atheism are very compatible. Nihilism. Right, the nothingness. Yeah, Dexter is right. He's a good psychopath. I only watched like 2 episodes of that. I was like, oh, that's interesting, but I don't know. I had a thought there and it went away. I think I'm good for the morning, guys. I think I gotta go. I got this table I gotta put together. We're gonna look at a house today. My eyeball hurts, all that stuff. Thank you for tuning out. Tuning in. Actually, what's our time? Yeah, we're getting in anyway. Yeah. You guys have a good one. We good? We'll catch you soon. This is a terrible ending. I'm sick. Forgive me. Don't make me feel ashamed. We'll catch you soon. Rock on.